You're listening to the cycling podcast at the 2026 Vuelta a España. On the ground and on the road from Monaco to Granada.
So far, I mean, Larry, he put it super good in words. Earlier this season, he said, like, Marco Brenner is the guy who was supposed to be good. And I wanted to change that, you know, from this young, talented guy to really show something. So, yeah.
Buenas tardes, Michele Pelacci. I'm not going to tell the listeners. I'm not going to tell the listeners what you look like. But look, I trust what you told me, that it must be very hot in Parma. And it's certainly very hot here in Spain. How are you?
Ciao. Welcome back to myself here at Cycling Podcast. It's good to be back. And
Pelacci, I felt orphaned without you this week.
Right?
I saw
you,
a bottle.
You look lost.
I saw a bottle of Sunny D in the car for today, and I almost bought it just for nostalgia's sake, just for old time's sake. Pelacci, we heard at the start of today's episode some IRL. I'm getting the hang of that now. In real life atmosphere from the roadside in Valdepeñas de Jaén, which is where I am now. I'm sitting in the sports hall where the press room was. Didn't go to the top. Didn't go to La Pandera. So that was the group of favourites going past the press room just before they tackled La Pandera. And then we heard Larry, the Motown Maestro, first mention of him. There'll be many mentions of him in this episode. Joshing with his teammate earlier in the Vuelta, and me, his teammate being Marco Brenner, about Marco Brenner's, well, all the hype that surrounded him when he turned professional early in his career, and the fact that he had recently, before today, won the Tour of Poland and started to deliver on that hype, and he delivered on it again today, didn't he, Pelacci? To spoiler things straight away, what a fantastic stage. Well, I think we're going to disagree about what a fantastic stage it was. But Pelacci, just to give you a bit more context, it only occurred to me as the GC group was approaching that this press room was perched at the top of this muro, this wall of Valdepeñas de Jaén, where I sat in 2021 and I saw Primoz Roglic beat Erik Mas up here. And we wondered whether we were going to get something similar today. The Rogmontada starting, Mass maybe on the ropes. We'll find out whether that materialized in a minute. But Pelacci,
interesting. I was going to ask you, how far were you from the Muro? Because it looked fantastic up there. You had lots of fans. The crowds have been amazing at this Vuelta. I've been enjoying them so far. And a lunar atmosphere up there on La Pandera, right? With the dry land, sort of, yeah, just otherworldly landscape. I enjoyed the scenery today.
Yeah, it's a bit of a 21st century classic La Pandera. When it debuted, it was billed as this Angliru of the south, and it actually, people felt a little bit deflated by it when the race actually arrived there, because really, if you analyse the statistics, it doesn't really bear comparison with the Angliru. There is one section that's very, very steep in the middle. We saw that today. But, you know, it shouldn't really be mentioned in the same breath as L'Angliru. But this is a gorgeous part of Spain, Pelacci, as you've seen on TV today. I'm sure, depending on which commentary you watch, people have been talking about the Sea of Olives, Pelacci, the province of Jaén, of course. What does it produce? Around 20-25% of the world's olive oil. 66 million olive trees. We've talked about that before on the cycling podcast. But what an absolute treat for the eyes, not for the legs. Not for the legs of the Vuelta a España peloton, Pelacci. This morning, I spoke to a lot of riders who are, well, it was the walking dead. There are a lot of riders in this race who are absolutely exhausted. Exhausted by the season, exhausted by the Vuelta so far, exhausted by the heat. That notwithstanding, I would suggest we've got a cracking race. Pelacci, this morning we were in not Valdepeñas de Jaén, but in Jaén itself. And as usual, we were talking to some of the chaps who we thought would be involved in the thick of the action today. I mentioned the prospect of the Rogmontada. Of course, Primoz Roglic trailed Enric Mas by 1 minute and 45 seconds. before today's stage. We heard yesterday from Callum Thornley say that Rog was about to, well, he was about to detonate something. He was about to set this Vuelta alight as far as he and Red Bull were concerned. Thought I'd verify that with another of the Red Bull chaps this morning. Luke Tuckwell, of course, Australian, young Roglic domestique, I suppose. He's a bit better than domestique, but that's the role he's playing in this Vuelta a España. I thought I'd ask him what he thought Roglic had in store for us this afternoon. So here I am talking to Luke Tuckwell this morning in Jaén.
Up until yesterday, it was pretty manageable, let's say. I think, yeah, especially stage 9 and some of the other days, was teetering right on the edge of being a bit much. Yesterday was a bit much. Really, I'm not sure how many people have done heat sessions in their life, but it felt like doing this for 4.5 hours. So, not the best, but, yeah, today's going ahead as fully planned. So, yeah, we just have to make the most of what it is today, unfortunately.
And this is a climb where Primoz, 4 years ago, he sort of started inching back towards Remco. How motivated does he look to you to make this a big day?
I mean, he's got pretty good memories of this climb. It was kind of all coming back to him on the bus as we were going back over it again. I think he's wary of the fact of the conditions and how hard it is today. And I do also think, as we saw 4 years ago, how strong he is actually on this climb. I was watching back the footage and it was like really impressive how he was riding. So I'm sure he's motivated today to do something similar.
Callum said to me yesterday he has the sense that Primoz has a bit of a killer instinct switch and he's about to flick it. Have you sensed that coming as well?
Yeah, I second what Callum said. I think he's waiting to hit go at the right moment. I think he knows that he only has a few really big bullets to really hit. So, he's waiting to hit go. So,
well, Palacci, that set things up nicely. A steely look in Luke Tuckwell's eyes when he said that Roglic meant business today. Let's see whether he did the business. Let's hear whether he did the business in today's Jamonómetro.
El Jamonómetro de Michele Palacci.
Palacci, let's disagree, shall we? I know what you're going to say here. How many jamones?
I'm going to give this stage 3 jamones, Daniele. It's not much. At this point of the race, I was expecting some differences, some, you know, news, something that was not expected, something that was different, something that was, you know, unscripted or out of the ordinary. Instead, we got sort of the same, more of the same of what we saw in previous mountaintop finishes. We got more of the same. I don't know, Daniel, is Enric Mas spoiling ciclismo now?
Oh my God. Oh my God. We'll be having debates in a few months' time. We'll be having debates about whether races are better without Enric Mas. Palacci, that reminds me, actually, as a preface to the Jamonómetro, I should have said, because it was a week ago that Tadej Pogacar, remember him, it was a week ago that he crashed out the Vuelta a España, and he and his team announced this morning that he would end his season, his 2026 season. He's not going to make a lightning fast comeback in time for the World Championships or the European Championships or the Tour of Lombardy. They softened the blow slightly by announcing that he'd also extended his contract to 2032. However, Palacci, you, a week ago, when Pogacar crashed out, you wanted to give the stage 5 jamones. I can't remember whether you said this on the record when we were recording, but you argued quite forcefully to me that, well, it was very dramatic. Yeah, of course it was very dramatic, Palacci, but it was, as a cycling spectacle, it was not something to be relished. Today, I think, was about as good as it could have been. The only criticism, Palacci, the only slight bugbear I've got, and this applies to any stage when we talked, I think when you were here, about these stages when you get very separate breakaway battles and GC battles, and it has been a bit more of a feature of this week. It becomes a bit of a problem for the director, the TV director, and it becomes quite difficult to follow the two things at the same time. And today, this afternoon, we had a very dramatic race at the front for the stage victory, But I really wanted to see exactly what was going on behind. I wanted to see everything that was going on behind in the GC group, and that was just impossible. Okay, you can have a split screen, but then you have to sort of squint. Palacci, you're always talking about my age. I, in particular, have to squint to see, you know, both screens. So otherwise, Palacci, I thought it was an absolute humdinger of a stage. Extraordinary landscape backdrop. A grandiose setting and some really interesting tactics. Satellite riders, we'll talk a lot about them later. Last night's discussion about satellite riders, that's generated a lot of feedback. And some interesting developments on general classification, Palacci. So I think you're talking rubbish, son.
Interesting. No, you're correct. I can't disagree. But also, when you see like the hierarchies were so well established, that did not excite me in a way. Five riders today, Daniele, either did not start or did not finish the stage. They were Moritz Kretschy, Jordan Labrosse, Hugo Hull, Christophe Laporte, and Oliver Pisch. Let's mention them right away. It's super hot. You can see riders struggling. You can see riders sort of asking or begging fans for them to pour, you know, cold water on them. I don't know, beautiful scenery with the iconic slight downhill in the final kilometer at La Pandera top. But my goodness, this race is crazy.
Palacci, I thought you were into the summary there, but that was just, this was you just justifying your three Jamones, was it? Should we get into the summary? Without further ado, usually we start with the GC as it stood the previous evening. Shall I do that, Palacci? Shall I remind the listeners how things were?
Because Enric Mas,
you go for
possibly
it.
The greatest cyclist ever, was dominating the GC this morning in Jaén, started with 1 minute and 45 seconds on Primoz Roglic and slightly more than 2 minutes on Felix Gal. Wout van Aert, Santiago Buitrago and Oscar Only were still in the lead of the respectively points, mountains and young riders competitions. As soon as the stage started, stage 14, 155 kilometers long with more than 4,000 meters of elevation kind of a stage, around a third of the peloton went on a breakaway. Among the 45 riders, there were Le Motel Maestro, Larry Warbasse, Valentin Paré-Peintre, Santiago Buitrago, João Almeida, Lorenzo Fortunato, and several satellite riders for the GC contenders. The best placed rider in GC were Christian Rodriguez of Astana and Clément Bardet of FDJ, both around 11 minutes down. The first 80 kilometers of the route were very hilly, but without any KOM sprint. The first one was the second category to Puerto de los Villares, where Santiago Buitrago took full points. Kevin Edermarque went on a bit of a fuga della fuga to win the following intermediate sprint of Castillo de Lucubín and the KOM sprint of Puerto de Lucubín. And he was later caught and overtaken by fellow baroudeur Georg Steinhauser. At the foot of the Muro de Valdepeñas de Jaén, a very steep half kilometer on a narrow Pueblo street.
Ciclismo? Very, ciclismo? Oh,
absolutely, very Vuelta-esque, right?
Mm.
I love that. The red jersey group was more than 7 minutes down to the breakaway. At the head of the race, Kevin Vermarke exploded and the philosopher Guillaume Martin joined Steinhauser as the final climb to Sierra de la Pandera started. On La Pandera, around 12K at 7.5% average gradient, sort of a double race was happening. The breakaway riders were fighting for the stage win. The GC contenders tried to gain time on each other. The selected group of riders joined the leading duo, but with around 5.5K to go, the 26-year-old Spaniard Mario Aparicio of Burgos Burpelez Beate rode away solo. Meanwhile, in the red jersey group, Pablo Castrillo waited for his leader, Enric Mas, and started pulling after a slightly shy attack by Richard Carapaz. Aparicio was caught a couple of kilometers later, and Santiago Buitrago tried to attack at the front of the race. Behind him, the strongest riders were Filippo Zana, Cristian Rodriguez, Ivan Ramiro Sosa, and Marco Brenner. With 2.8K to go, Enric Mas accelerated, but for maybe the first time in this race, Primoz Roglic went to the front on the Mayo Rojo group and looked like he was going to do something, then didn't really do that. This is when, in fact, Little Carapaz attacked once again. This time he was more effective, but he was later caught by Gal, Roglic and Mas. With around 1.5k to go, it was Felix Gal who launched his own attack. Roglic himself accelerated a dozen meters later, but Enric Mas was closing every single gap. At the front of the race, a quartet formed with Sosa, Rodriguez, Buitrago and Renner. Buitrago launched his attack with the Flamme Rouge on sight, but it was Marco Brenner who emerged victorious in a final uphill sprint. Behind him, and behind the breakaway riders, several of them, Garcia Pierna waited for Mas, pacing him and Gal on the final couple of kilometers. Mas and Gal arrived around 4 minutes down stage leader Marco Brenner, while Roglic and Carapaz lost even more time.
Excellent summary, Michele. A lot to digest there, a lot to explain, but you did it very, very well. Pelacci, let's start with the stage result, shall we? You've already given us a very good outline, but it was Marco Brenner of Tudor Pro Cycling who won in time of 4 hours, 15 minutes and 9 seconds. Santi Buitrago of Bahrain Victorious was second, 1 second gap in the end. C-Rod Christian Rodriguez of XDS Astana was third, 11 seconds down. Ivan Sosa was fourth, 14 seconds down. Valentin Paris-Peintre, the sort of unsung hero and second place rider in yesterday's stage of Sudal Quickstep, he was fifth, 22 seconds down. Clément Berthet of Groupama was sixth, 27 seconds down. Then we had Nordhagen, Zana, Calzoni and Almeida. João Almeida, remember him. And they all sort of came in dribs and drabs. In fact, we didn't see a group of two riders until, well, it was Ivo Oliveira and Kevin Vermaak, the two UAE boys. They came in 3 minutes and 38 seconds down. Pelacci, the first of the GC leaders to come in was Felix Gal, 21st place. He was 4 minutes and 12 seconds behind Brenner. He came in with Enric Mas, as you said. They had both had a lovely toe from Raul García Pierna. Primoz Roglic, well, he lost how many seconds, Pelacci? It was 25 seconds in the end, wasn't it, on Gal and Mas. We'll find out in a minute what that has done for the general classification. Of the other GC contenders, Carapaz, he was 6 seconds behind Roglic, so 4:43 behind Brenner. And I'm also going to give the finishing position of Oscar Onley and Jakob Omrazel. Of course, they are locked in a bit of a battle for the white jersey. And they came in together, Pelacci, 29th and 30th place. On general classification, Enric Mas still leads, but he leads by 2 minutes and 6 seconds now. Not from Primoz Roglic, but Felix Gal, who's jumped up into second place. Roglic is now third, 2:10 down. And, well, he's over that sort of two-minute threshold that we've been talking about, which is sort of, well, my bar, Pelacci, for Roglic maybe being in the virtual lead of this race. Mas, I don't think anyone could dispute, is in the virtual lead if we take into account the time trial that's coming early next week. Carapaz is fourth, 4:24 down. Onley is fifth, 5:44 down. And Omrazel is 6:14 down. Skelmoser remains where he was, seventh, 6:49 down. C-Rod, Christian Rodriguez, has moved up three places. He is now eighth, 7 minutes and 1 second down. And Clément Berthet of Groupama has moved up one place as well. He is ninth and Sepp Kuss is 10th. He's lost two places on general classification. No changes in the points competition. Van Aert leads over Brennan. In the King of the Mountains competition, Buitrago had another good day. He now leads by 29 points from Wout Van Aert. In the Young Riders classification, no change. Still 30 seconds separating Oscar Onley, who leads, and Jakob Omrazel. Wow, Pelacci. This is turning into a very eventful Vuelta a España, isn't it? There's no status quo here, Pelacci, is what I would say. Well, the only status quo is that Enric Mas still leads. He still looks pretty good. Although there are lots of subtleties to discuss, lots of clues as to what might happen next week, I would suggest. Before we ponder all of that, Pelacci, let's hear, as we always do, from some of the chaps involved today. Let's hear from Felix Gal, who had a good day, I would say he silenced those who suggested that he is, as you would say, Pelacci, bolito, washed and out of contention to win this Vuelta a España. He moved up to second place and he's moved ahead of Primoz Roglic. So we're going to hear from him first, Felix Gal from Decathlon CMA CGM. And then, of course, we're going to hear from Larry, the Motown maestro, who played a key role in Marco Brennan's victory today.
It was, I guess, in a Grand Tour week two, end of week two, you never really know how good you are. Because, you don't feel so good, but then, when it counts, the legs are there. That's what's the most important. Movistar made it pretty hard in the final. I think I didn't want to take too much risk with the heat of the last days and also today again, so I wanted to see how I would feel and wait until the end. And I'm super happy that I could gain a few seconds in the final, and that the shape is there.
Hey, Globally, you have the feeling that the shape is improving during this Vuelta?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. Like I said, fatigue is for sure building up now. Also with the heat, it's just really exhausting. But I'm obviously it's going well, and I'm happy.
I mean, it's insane. That's been the team's goal. I mean, since they started, first Grand Tour victory for the team. It's insane, and I mean, we knew obviously Marco was in good shape having won Poland. Not exactly a small race, and he didn't. He didn't have the best legs the first week, and I guess the thing is, it just shows like you can never stop believing. Because, I mean, if he would have just thought, "Oh, it's over," this wouldn't happen. And so, I mean, it was such a stout breakaway today. There were some really, really good riders in there, and to be honest, like they didn't give us a crazy big leash, and so. I don't know, I kind of thought it was maybe touch and go, but then, it went out a little bit, and then, bottom of the last climb, we just thought, if we can go for Marco, we'll see what happens, and somehow he pulled it off, which is just insane.
If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. It's destroying athlete, creator, and YouTube maxer. YouTube Premium enhances how I use YouTube with awesome features like offline downloads, so I can download my favorite training videos before I hit the gym. So no Wi-Fi doesn't turn leg day into loading day. Plus, I get ad-free videos, background play, and so much more. YouTube Premium is like YouTube got some extra gains. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Haley Bailey. Okay, I need to tell you about something. I just got YouTube Premium. It's got tons of awesome features like offline downloads, so I can download my favorite videos before I travel and watch them whenever I don't have Wi-Fi. Because we all know airplane Wi-Fi is the worst. I get ad-free, I get background play, and there's like a ton more in there. You should try it. If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. So try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. That's a mouthful.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAPS sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Well, Pelacci, let's talk about the stage victory first, shall we? Should we talk about the stage win first?
Yeah, what a comeback win for Marco Brenner, right? He was sort of nowhere to be seen for most of the stage, even on the final climb. He played his cards right. I think he hid behind others. He was crucial. The moments in which he chose to attack, in which he chose to be in the front, in which he pushed the pace, were fantastic. What a mastermind win from him. I wasn't familiar with, to quote Shaquille O'Neal, I wasn't familiar with his game. Fantastic stuff by Brenner and Tudor. important win for them, right?
Well, it's a really important win because that team, and in spite of Larry's best efforts and the best efforts of some of their other riders in this Vuelta a España, I mean, they're not having the best of season. Things have really started to look up for them in the last couple of weeks. Brenner had that surprise victory, really, in the Tour of Poland. And this was a very welcome sort of return to form for him. He's had some real misfortune. I mean, he had that crash in the Val d'Aosta in the Giro d'Italia last year, which I think we touched on in our discussion with Larry and him early in the Vuelta, when there were fears that he wouldn't ride again. I mean, it could have even been more serious than that at one point. And I think we talked in that interview about how it's been a bit of a battle for him to regain confidence, particularly on descent. And finally, as he himself said, he's sort of living up to the potential that he showed when he was a junior. You know, he was one of these really, really highly rated juniors, a real prodigy. He signed for DSM, what was DSM at the time. Again, we mentioned this earlier in the Vuelta, he was so young when he signed for them that his parents had to sign the contract. I think he was 17 years of age, one of the youngest riders I think ever to sign for a World Tour team. And he went straight into the World Tour team as well when he was, I think, 18 in 2021. He was extremely good in the Vuelta in 2022, almost won stage at Peñas Blancas, where we're going next week. But yeah, it has been a bit of a struggle for him. He sort of broke his contract. He was one of these riders who I think left DSM early before the end of his contract, came to an agreement with them that he would be better served elsewhere. And yeah, is one of Tudor's most important riders, I would suggest, or will turn into one of Tudor's most important riders. He's got a very long contract there, which expires in 2030. But Pelacci, I mean, we've talked quite a bit about Tudor's difficulties over the last few months. I mean, obviously, they've really moved up in the last couple of years, and they gambled hard on these two riders in particular, Marc Hirschi and Julien Alaphilippe, who, they seem like curious signings in that they were kind of duplicates on their best days, very similar characteristics. And obviously, well, it worked to an extent with Alaphilippe last year because he won in Quebec and he came close to winning a couple of stages in the Tour. It really hasn't worked with Hirschi yet. And I think in the middle of this year in particular, there was a lot of soul searching in the management of that team, and changes were made. Ricardo Scheidecker, who was sort of the performance managers, maybe not quite it, but he sort of decided riders' schedules and did a lot of the planning, a lot of the sort of overarching management. He left his position, and you got the sense that it was a team that was really sort of looking around for new solutions and a new direction. Meanwhile, they're building this fantastic headquarters near Luzerne, which is sort of a statement of intent for that team. And it sort of tells us that this is a sponsor and this is a team that wants to be around and wants to be a very big team for a long time. But this will be manna from heaven for them, Pelacci, this win today.
Yep, I was watching the list of the wins this season, and they've got just a stage in the Alula Tour in February, Tour of the Alps, and then three national championships. They've been winning World Tour races since Poland, the Stage 7, going to Kung, and the GC to Brenner. And today, Daniele, I'm curious on your opinion about, do you think Santiago Buitrago sort of lost a big chance today? Because I think he made two crucial mistakes. Number one, on the last, it was one of the last turns to the right when he launched his attack. It looked like the finish line was after that turn. They had still the descent and still a final kick. In that final kick, so I think he launched too early, too big of an attack. And then, on the final kick, he let Brenner be in first position, right? And the road was narrow, there was a turn, it was nowhere...
Did he let him, Pelacci, or did Brenner just have better legs today? That was my suspicion. I mean, Brenner himself seemed to have made a huge mistake when Buitrago launched the attack, because he was fiddling with his jersey. You couldn't see what he was doing. And then I was slightly puzzled when he came over the line and the jersey was still undone. I thought what we were going to see at that point was that he'd already been thinking about his celebration 2 kilometres from the finish, but not the case. But that gave Buitrago an advantage of 100 or 200 metres. And I thought that Brennan might not get back on, because that's a steep descent, about, what is it, 1,500 metres or maybe a kilometre from the line on La Pandera. And then you saw that Brenner is a punchy rider. I mean, I mentioned Alaphilippe and Hirschi a minute ago. Brenner is not that different from them either. Those are his characteristics. But I just don't know whether Buitrago was on a great day and is on great form generally.
I think Marco Brenner after the stage said, "You leave for days like this." Yeah, kudos to him. I mean, we've been talking about how he's been struggling in this Vuelta a España as well, with crashes, with illnesses. Fantastic stuff for a young rider and for Germany as well, right? We had Steinhauser up there today. Good to see a German.
Two Bavarians, Steinhauser, a Bavarian from different parts, very different parts of Bavaria, but Brenner is a Bavarian from Augsburg as well. Pellacci, you know, Buitrago obviously had Peyo Bilbao doing great work in a similar fashion to the work that Bilbao did and also Buitrago did a couple of days ago for Omrazil. And they were the team that was maybe sort of the most visibly in the break, working together and working well together and ensuring that they had a big enough gap that the GC guys weren't going to come back. But I think what you also saw today with Larry in the break, but also Talman and Will Barter as well, on a day like today when it's as hot as it is, I think a lot of the really important work is the unseen work and the mundane work, things like going for water, emptying bottles over the team leader's head, and, well, just preparing him for that. It was about maybe making one move, but making the right move today for Marco Brenner. And that's exactly what happened, isn't it, Pellacci?
It was. And also, Marco Brenner mentioned the fact that he felt better and better as the stage went on. I think other riders had a chance as well. Cristian Rodriguez, Ivan Ramiro Sosa, they looked very good on the climb. Yeah, Brenner just had a bit more of energy.
Indeed, Pellacci. And meanwhile, in the German classification group, it was an intriguing battle. And what we mainly saw today was Movistar controlling things pretty well. I mean, they've had almost universal praise for the way they've dealt with things since Mas took the red jersey, of course, a week ago. And both in the way they've decided to control the early parts of stages, or not control them too much, not burn too much energy, controlling the first sort of hours, 2 hours of races, and then also in their ability to get riders down the road. And it's often been, well, the last two mountain stages, certainly it's been Castrillo and Raul García Pierna, who both came in very handy today. And we talked yesterday, and we're going to talk again later in the episode about satellite riders, but we're going to talk generally, Pellacci, more about Mas next week, because I'm conscious of the fact that he has been leading the Vuelta for a week now. We haven't done an awful lot on him, so we're really going to dig deep next week to find the sort of inside story behind Movistar and Mas's very successful Vuelta so far. But it was notable today that they picked exactly the right moments for García Pierna and Castrillo to drop back to Mas, or for Mas to catch them up. It was points on La Pandera when it wasn't too steep, the gradient wasn't too extreme, and those two riders, who are more rulers than they are pure climbers, were really able to help Enric Mas. Roglic obviously was less well represented. We expected that, but again, we were seeing his teammates all day sort of emptying water over his head and doing what they could. And he did have Tuckwell into the bottom of the sort of real Pandera starts with 7 kilometers to go, and he had Tuckwell pretty much into the bottom of that climb. Gal obviously lost Mühlberger. We heard from him this morning. He said that he didn't think he would feel the absence of Mühlberger too much today because of the sort of configuration of the stage. That proved the case, because Ricky Tello had a very good day as well. But in the last 6 kilometres, it was Gal, wasn't it, who was the most aggressive initially. Well, Carapaz did his usual thing. Carapaz launched the first grenade, shall we say, and that really drew out Gal. Gal looked more potent today than he has in the mountain stages thus far. You know, he was getting a little bit of separation, and Mas was taking a few seconds to come back. And then Roglic maybe looked as though he thought they could work in conjunction he and Gal to sort of work Mass over and eventually tire him out, because obviously Mass is the guy who's got to follow the moves. But then something quite strange, well, it looks strange to me, happened. Pellacci, with about 2.5 kilometers to go on La Pandera, on a section which looked to me almost like a false flat, but García Pierna back with Mass at that point, Roglic suddenly started losing the wheels. And it was also the point when Carapaz was losing the wheels as well, but it just didn't look like a part of the climb that was particularly conducive to dropping anyone. And yet Roglic, you know, suddenly, well, Mass and Gal were going up the road, going away, and, you know, it was one bike length, two bike lengths, and then all of a sudden it was 10 seconds, 15 seconds. And I don't know what you were thinking at that point, Pellacci, but it initially struck me as quite strange.
Interesting. I think Roglic, probably Father Time is knocking at his door, but what was really staggering to me, once again, we're sort of expecting him to improve during the race, to be better stage after stage. It has not really happened. It's like his condition has been plateauing in a way. And there is a time trial. We keep saying that. I was looking at his recent form on time trials. It's not been fantastic in the last couple of years. This stage, more of the... what gave us really was storylines that maybe were coming up. This Rogue Montada, this Christian Rodriguez and Clément Barthé out of nowhere, 7 minutes up. Maybe they can go back a lot of time, can gain tons of time. What about the Carapaz? Carapaz with his attacks, maybe he could have launched like he did on Velefique the other day. But these storylines didn't really materialize. I think the podium fight is over. Mas, Gal, and Roglic will be on the podium in some shape and form, but it's the three of them. Oscar only maybe is man-marking Omrzel now in the white jersey competition.
Yeah, I mean, he told me yesterday that he was certainly looking forward more than he's looking back. He's concentrating more on, well, he was concentrating more on trying to get onto the podium than he was on worrying about Omrzel. But yes, I think we've seen on his level, there is still, I think, latitude for there to be movement. You know, you said the podium's decided. I don't think the podium order is decided by any stretch of the imagination. And Pellacci, I was ready to say to you today, if Roglic, and I fully expected when there were 2 or 3 kilometres to go on the climb, I fully expected Roglic to finish with Mass. I was ready to say to you, well, that is at least a change in momentum, because on every previous mountain stage, serious mountain stage, Mass had dropped Roglic. And if Roglic had managed to stay with him, then that maybe signified that the sort of tide was changing slightly. And then things like, which we've talked about before, the bonus seconds, the possibility of sort of gaining 20 seconds next week in bonus seconds, and then the advantage in the time trial, you know, again, I've sort of established this 2-minute line in the sand, and I was sort of ready to say that if it was still 1:45 as it was this morning, then maybe it was advantage Roglic again, even if we don't think he's going to take all of those 1:45 in the time trial. However, I would say that with Mass having gained those 25 seconds, it is a sort of continuation of status quo. But it's by no means over. It's hard to see how Felix Gal is going to get back 2 minutes on Emerick Mass at this point. Mass would have to have a bit of a crisis. I don't think he looked as good today. I asked him, in fact, about the moment when Roglic was dropped and how hard, how fast García Pierna was going at that point. And Mas said, well, look, I was almost dropped at that point. I was really struggling. García Pierna was absolutely, you know, he was drilling it at that point. But he still looked pretty solid. He did still look pretty solid. And the team looked really solid as well. He also mentioned Kian Uttabrooks, obviously, who they lost earlier on in the race. I thought that was a nice gesture, a sort of magnanimous mention of Kian Uttabrooks, who is another who left this race quite a long time ago now and has almost been forgotten. But of course, he was supposed to be the main mountain domestique for Mass. They've settled on this solution, brilliant solution, of Castrillo and García Pierna down the road. But even even in the sort of part of the team, the division of the team that's staying with Mas, Canal and Arcas have been really strong as well, and they did most of the donkey work today for the majority of the stage, and Ivan Romeo, of course.
Donkey work is a fun term, but you're correct. And I feel like these Spanish young riders who are sort of, they not all of them have been growing up in the Movistar system. They come from Cam Pharma or other teams. They have been buying in on a Spanish rider winning La Vuelta, and they take pride in a Spanish rider finally back on the top of the podium. Also, Felix Gall, main point of strength, his team, is going, they are still good, but Gregor Moberger did not finish yesterday's stage. Jordan Labrosse did not finish today's stage. There is something there.
I mean, one thing you thought might happen, and the one thing that Gal had in his favour, was that there might have been scope at some point for some kind of ambush that relied on the collective power of the team. So again, it's difficult to see how Felix Gal is going to overturn that 2-minute deficit unless something unforeseen and, well, undesirable happens to Enric Mas. Pelacci, anything else you'd like to mention before we get on to the Encuentro del Día?
Maybe just the fact that I was looking at, withdrawals. Alpecin is down to 3 riders. NSM is down to 4 riders. UAE Team Emirates is down to 4 riders. One of the very few teams who still has a complete roster of 8 riders is Red Bull Bora-Hansgrohe, but still they're not as potent as, peloton dominant as Movistar.
Exactly, Pelacci. I would concur with you on that, Pelacci. It is time, I would suggest, for the Encuentro del Día, Pelacci. Yesterday, like today, we had a big breakaway and an exciting stage. And one of the riders in that breakaway yesterday, and a rider who finished 9th in the end on yesterday's stage, was the Dane Simon Dalby of UnoX Mobility, an intriguing character, only 23 years of age, so a young rider, a promising rider, who's only in his second year as a professional. But, Pelacci, I was alerted by some colleagues to an interesting detail, shall we say, about Simon Dalby's professional career to date. In fact, last autumn, so at the end of his first pro season, Dalby had, shall we say, a medical emergency. He was sitting at home with his parents when he suddenly felt his arm, I think it was his right arm, going numb. And what happened subsequently was variously described as, well, 2 strokes was how it was described in some reports. I read the team's press release before speaking to Simon Dalby earlier, and what was actually diagnosed was a small congenital opening between the chambers of Simon's heart, known as a PFO, patent foramen ovale. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but as I said, it was a bit of a medical emergency. I'm going to leave it to Simon Dalby to explain exactly what did happen and how he recovered, but he has recovered, thankfully. And he is the victim of today's Encuentro del Día. So here that is.
El Encuentro del Día. The meeting of the day.
Well, Simon, you were in the break yesterday. Just tell me, have you recovered? How do you feel this morning?
Yeah, I feel, of course, a bit tired after yesterday. It was very hot day out there in the front, also battling the heat, so I feel okay, but of course a bit tired after yesterday.
So yesterday it came up, a lot of people mentioned this accident, this issue you had last year. I heard it described as a double stroke, which sounded very dramatic. Just tell us what happened, when it happened, in your own words.
I was at home at my parents' place eating dinner, feeling completely normal, and then from 1 second to another I got more or less completely numb in my right arm and part of my right side of my body. It happened 2 times in a few minutes, and then we called an ambulance, got to the hospital.
And were you conscious at that point?
Yeah, I was barely conscious. I was fighting to keep conscious, but yeah, I was conscious the whole time.
And then what happened over the next hours and days?
Yeah, I was in the hospital for some days, getting checked up, finding out what the reason was. Then I was in a new hospital for 10 days, a rehabilitation hospital. And then I think 1 month after the accident, I had an operation in the heart to close a gap, which was the reason for the clots.
So I saw quotes from the team doctor, Rory. He said that it's quite common what you had, so 25% of people may have the susceptibility to this. But then also, I've seen quotes from you saying, I was lucky. So how dangerous was it?
Yeah, I think it was pretty dangerous and could definitely have got very much worse. And I think I'm very lucky that I can stand here 10 months later and do a grand tour. I mean, going back to being a professional cyclist was definitely not given.
And after the operation, just talk to me a bit about your recovery and your path back to professional cycling.
Yeah, so the biggest issue after the operation was that I had some issues with my heart rhythm after the operation. So that lasted a month where I was, things were pretty bad. Luckily it vanished by itself and I didn't need an extra operation or anything like that. So I think in the middle of January, things started to get better. And I think since then, things have just been going in the right direction.
And everything's normal with your heart rhythm and yeah?
Everything completely normal.
Excellent. And well then, just tell me, so this obviously opens doors. Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore. How do you envisage the next couple of years? You're obviously a young rider, you're obviously still developing, but how do you envisage the next couple of years of your career?
Yeah, I hope to continue my development. I think this year I've been taking some really good steps in the right direction. So if I can continue that, I can hopefully continue, maybe actually win when I sit in the final like yesterday.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Hailey Bailey. Okay, I need to tell you about something. I just got YouTube Premium. It's got tons of awesome features like offline downloads, so I can download my favorite videos before I travel and watch them whenever I don't have Wi-Fi. Because we all know airplane Wi-Fi is the worst. I get ad-free, I get background play, and there's like a ton more in there. You should try it. If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Try it now for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium.
If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Ever thought about Botox but worried you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
We'll see. I don't know. I think I'll kind of find out when I get on the bike, but I feel okay, and yeah, I'm still motivated for today, so we'll see what happens.
Larry, my sense, what I've picked up from you on this Vuelta is that you coming in with good legs hasn't necessarily, because you're not going to have great legs every day on a grand tour, but my sense is that maybe it's helping you to recover better than ordinarily would be the case.
Yeah, I definitely think I've recovered well, but I've also like really made an effort to recover well. You know, I think one thing I learned in the Giro this year was just like on the days that I can go easy. And then the other thing for me is the most important thing is sleep. And so You know, I really try to avoid caffeine most days. Other than, I mean, I have my morning coffee, and then that's it. Unless I want to go in the breakaway. Then maybe I'll have, you know, another coffee before the start or a caffeine gel or something like that. But, yeah, so, and then because of that, I just sleep like a baby every night, you know. I mean, I've been sleeping like crazy, you know. I would say my average sleep would probably be close to 9 hours for this whole Vuelta.
Look at your heart rate variability. We're really going into the weeds now.
Yeah, I do, but...
what numbers are we looking at, Larry?
Today wasn't great.
Go on, give me the number.
Well, I don't know. Today I think it was 68, which is very low for me.
It's good for me.
No, I mean, usually I'm like... I mean, when I'm feeling good in training and stuff, I'm usually between like 110 and 140. So yeah, today was low, but... I don't know, for some reason as well, I've been a bit lower, but say the last days I was around in the 90s.
My top tip for heart rate variability, Larry, would be to stay after red wine, but presumably you are doing that at the weather.
I am doing that, yeah.
Kit Bowman, one of our listeners, asks, and I think we've spoken about this before, Larry, but he asks, weight loss drugs, I think he means, seems to be all the rage at the moment with loads of celebs and others making striking losses. We know cycling has a long and complicated history with weight, and I wonder if weight loss drugs have caught on in the men's peloton. I should have done my research before this, Larry. It maybe rings a bell that WADA have them on the watch list?
Yeah, I think probably, but I mean, from what I have seen about them, I think what it does is kind of like inhibits appetite or whatever. So, I mean, in the end, like... I maybe it slows digestion a bit also, or something like that. I don't know. I actually think it would be like counterproductive for cycling because like we need to eat so many carbs, you know, and so we need to just like we fuel insane, you know, and we essentially we need to be digesting like crazy. So something that would slow your digestion would be probably like the most anti-performance enhancing drug, you know. So I actually don't think those would be an effective method. So yeah.
Just talk for a second about the relationship. So as we know, the carb intake has gone up, particularly during efforts, during training, during racing. And what effect has that had on the weight loss question?
I think, we just have a lot more carbs now than, and maybe like before we ate way too much protein, things like that, you know? Like, you know, I don't know, it used to be like, you'd have like a few pieces of chicken, you know, at dinner or whatever. Now it's like half a piece because, I mean, we still have because we consume so much, we still have a lot of protein, you know. So every day we're still getting 2 grams per kilogram of protein, which is quite a lot. You know, I'd say like the RDA or whatever is something like 1.2 to 1.4, maybe even less. But so we're like way above that, you know. But the thing is just because we're consuming such enormous quantities of food, there we get a lot of protein anyway. So I think it's just, yeah, we've limited the fat and protein more than we did before. And now we're just really smashing the carbs. And then, yeah, I mean, I think also because you are less, I would like to say the F word, but, you know, like less wrecked, you know, every day. Your hormones stay in better balance. I think you screw over your hormones less. And that actually allows you to get leaner, potentially. So I think it was just before we were just kind of like battering our bodies. And now we're way more calculated about it. So, I mean, everyone's probably even leaner than they used to be, you know, at least as lean. And but we're just fueling way better and the timing's better. And so, yeah, I'd say everything's concentrated really on the bike. And then... I'd say that's what the biggest difference.
So dialed in, Larry. You dialed in like a Tudor watch.
Yeah, except I haven't set the time on this for a few days, so I might get in trouble. I already got talking to you yesterday and forgot to set it again today. So, you know, I need to be more dialed in like my Tudor watch, yeah.
So, Pelagi, that was the daily check-in with Larry before his heroics later in the day in service of Marco Brenner, who, of course, went on to win the stage. And, Pelagi, well, that kicks off the interactive part of the podcast, the third part. Yesterday, we had a very lively discussion about satellite riders. Some of our listeners got very animated about this, they were obviously very interested in the discussion. We had some great feedback. Gareth Enticott on X or on Twitter he went back and looked for the earliest mention that he could find online, and he found something from 2016. He says also satellite has different meanings other than being in orbit, as Lionel Burney suggested. In geography, it refers to a subservient relation between a dominant city and a smaller town, like Watford. He also said the Latin origin of satellite does not refer to space travel slash orbit. That came later. Its original meaning refers to a guard, escort, helper to someone more powerful. So in that sense, it works, but maybe not as intended. Gary Bandy sent me a message, I think, on Instagram. He said an alternative satellite rider could be Boomerang Rider. You throw them up the road and then you catch them when they come back. Thought that was pretty good. Ghost of John Brown said, instead of satellite rider, I'd recommend ADVON. ADVON stands for Advanced Echelon, which is a small advance team sent ahead of a main military unit to prepare a location for operations or training. Also, given that they are launching ahead of the peloton, in brackets platoon, it has a nice symmetrical ring to it. Cheers.
Wow, what a comment.
Pelacci, I said I'd be back through the archives, or I'd sort of rack my brain, and I'd also had some good suggestions from listeners of or for occasions when that kind of move, so a team sending someone down the road, has proved decisive or very important in major tours. Now, I've limited myself to 21st century, Pelacci. And I've already mentioned a couple of these over the last few days, but I drew up a bit of a top 10 in no particular order. Simon Yates and Wout van Aert, 2025 Giro d'Italia. I mentioned that a couple of days ago. Colle della Finestra, of course, very famous. Alberto Contador, Fuente de, in 2012. A legendary Vuelta-winning move on a stage that looked just like a transition stage in Cantabria. Contador had riders sort of scattered all over the road, and he sort of caught up with them and used them and was able to overturn what looked like an impossible situation against Purito Rodriguez. Number three, Fabio Aru, also in the Vuelta, this time 2015, stage 20 to Cerceria. Tom Dumoulin was leading that Vuelta. Astana and Aru again used satellite riders to very good effect. Another example of offensive satellite riders. Satellite riders used for offensive attacking purposes. We'll come on to some defensive ones in a minute. Number four, Andy Schleck. A couple of listeners reminded me of this. Very famously in the States of the Galibier in the 2011 Tour de France, he had the likes of Maxime Montfort down the road. Maxime Montfort, who was in the podcast yesterday because he's now a direct sportif of Little Trek. And that was a stage-winning and indeed race-winning move as well in 2000. No, it wasn't a race-winning move because Cadel Evans won that Tour de France, but it was a stage-winning move and it was very spectacular and very well executed. Pelacci, you might even remember this one. Vincenzo Nibali, 2011 Giro d'Italia. A stage most often remembered for Stephen Kruiswijk crashing on the Agnello, but people forget that Nibali and Astana, featuring quite a lot of these, they had sent Scarponi down the road, and I think maybe one of the rider, and that was key to Nibali gaining time on that stage to Rizul over Esteban Chavez, as well as Kruiswijk, and going on to win the Giro d'Italia. Wout van Aert at Hautacam in 2022. Of course, he was caught by Vingegaard and Pogacar and then was able to do a great lead out for Vingegaard, who then went on to beat Pogacar in that stage and beat him in...
What a day it was.
Exactly, yeah. Very famous occasion. Vingegaard went on to win that Tour de France ahead of Pogacar. Number seven, Pelacci. 2004, Giro d'Italia, Damiano Cunego. He was only really the deputy leader for Saeco, but on the stage to Falces, Gilberto Simoni was the real leader of the team, but on the stage to Falces in the Sud Tirol, so right in the extreme north of Italy, Saeco sent Cunego down the road. He already had Andrea Tonti and Eddie Mazzolini down the road, and he caught up with them, and they towed him onto the final climb, and he gained a lot of time and went on to win that Giro d'Italia. Now, Pelacci, we get to a couple of really good examples of defensive satellite riders. So when a rider was in trouble, him finding a teammate somewhere down the road and the input of that teammate or teammates being really crucial. Ryder Heyerdahl, 2012 Giro d'Italia, stage 20. That stage went over the Monte Tirolo early in the stage. A lot of teams sent guys down the road, mindful that their domestiques would ordinarily be dropped on the Monte Tirolo, but if they sent them over there in advance parties, so to speak, as point men, they might come in useful later. And indeed they did for Ryder Heyerdahl. And Max9124 on Twitter reminded me of this, that Peter Stettiner and Christian Van der Velde were sent over the Monte Tirolo ahead of the GC group. Heyerdahl caught up with them and they rode in the Valtellina. They did fantastic work in the Valtellina and they limited Heyerdahl's deficit, and Thomas de Gendt was up the road and they effectively saved the Giro for Heyerdahl. He went on to win it the next day. Number 9, Pellacci, in the Vuelta a España at La Covatilla in 2020. Primoz Roglic was in trouble on what was the final mountain stage of that race, but he found a teammate effectively almost at the side of the road, Lennart Hofstetter. Remember him for Jumbo Visma, I think it was at the time. Richard Carapaz was attacking. Roglic looked as though he was sort of losing his grip on the red jersey, but Hofstetter proved invaluable for Roglic for only a few hundred meters and allowed him to save his red jersey and save that Vuelta a España. And the last one, I'll give you Pellacci, number 10, Adam Yates, Pladadei, 2024 Tour de France. This was one of those moves that it's debatable how much of an advantage he actually gave Tadej Pogacar. But if you'll remember, he attacked just before Pogacar on this mountaintop finish at Pladadei. Pogacar caught up with him, dropped Vingegaard, and Yates then towed Pogacar, gave Pogacar a bit of a rest for a few hundred meters, and then Pogacar, of course, romped away to win the stage. But I just thought that was a good example in terms of a very specific purpose that a satellite rider was serving, but very well executed. So there you go. There you go, Pellacci.
I got one example myself.
Go on.
In 2022, Giro d'Italia, last mountain stage to La Marmolada, Passo Fedaia, Leonard Kemna was up the road.
Excellent example.
Yeah, on the straight long part on the Fedaia, he met Jai Hindley, and together they were dropping Richard Carapaz, decisive move to win that Giro.
La etapa de mañana y asuntos varios. Tomorrow's stage and any other business.
But actually, before we talk about tomorrow's stage, last night's dinner, we were in Granada and had a beautiful romantic meal. Pellacci, sad you couldn't be there, at a restaurant called El Mirador de Tato, which is a beautiful restaurant with a terrace that overlooks all of Granada, the old town. It's in Albaicin, the old Muslim part of Granada. Views of the Alhambra, all beautifully illuminated at night. What did I have? Oh, I had a carpaccio, which was a mistake, Pellacci. Carpaccio, of course, an Italian dish, and it was a little bit fatty. Again, I keep complaining about the meat in Spain being a little bit fatty, but that's just my taste, I guess. And what else did I have? Oh, burrata, the ubiquitous burrata, which is everywhere now in France and Spain, and I can't wait till it goes out of fashion, because we have reached overkill. Burrata overkill internationally, I would suggest, Pellacci. Would you agree?
I would agree, Daniele, 100%. It's a bit of a, you know, Italian mythical food now. We've got some of those in pistachio as well, is one of them, or yeah, just almost every type of pasta. Too much.
Anyway, Pellacci, let's talk about tomorrow's stage, shall we? We don't know exactly, do we? You're monitoring the wires, shall we say? You're monitoring social media.
We do.
Oh, we do. We've got official confirmation.
An hour ago, the Vuelta just sent out a tweet, for example, a press release maybe. It's official. Breaking news. Stage 15 got changed. The route shortened from around 190 kilometers to 110. That's okay to me. It's not a problem, Daniele. You have a blast tomorrow. The race starts at 3 p.m.
Wow.
You got plenty of time tomorrow.
Wow, fantastic. So there were a couple of circuits on yesterday's route anyway, and I guess, Pellacci, I'm just bringing up the map now. What's happened is they've taken out one or both of the circuits. However, before we establish that, I should say that I became aware, or we all became aware this morning, that there were discussions taking place about maybe shortening the route amongst the riders' representatives, the CPA, the riders' union. And one of the representatives of the riders' union at this race is Jacopo Mosca of Little Trek. We're going to hear from him in a second about the discussions that had taken place. Incidentally, Enric Mas was also one of the riders' representatives on this Vuelta a España, but he's been excused from his representative duties because obviously he's leading the general classification. And you could argue it's got a bit of a vested interest in stages being cancelled or shortened. So we'll hear from Jacopo Mosca, and then we're going to hear from Jack Haig of Net Company Ineos, and he's going to give us his general view about the heat the riders have faced in this Vuelta a España and the decision that the riders already pretty much knew would be taken about tomorrow's stage. So here they are, Jacopo Mosca and Jack Haig, talking to us this morning.
Basically, we had a meeting with the organizer, and the organizer were really happy to listen our idea, our topic, and to also keep in our side. And we have to say, it's going to be something today after the stage, is going to come a decision from them. I mean, they are working on it, but for sure they need time. And for tomorrow, we will have for sure the best scenario possible to have a race, but also to prioritize our health. We cannot say over this temperature is too much, because maybe it's the humidity, maybe it's the area, maybe it's the parkour, maybe you have a tree, then you have a bit of shadow, you have nothing, you are in the middle of the desert. So it's too big to say when it's too much, but there is a moment when for us as a rider, day by day in the heat, there is also start to be too much. We are the three representative riders, and the representative of the CPA, all the jury, and the doctor of the race, and the representative of the doctor of the teams, and the squad director. Steven Kruiswijk went instead of Mas, because it's, Enric Mas is in a position where he's leading the race, and it's also, he has other more important teams, and the CPA decided to have Steven Kruiswijk, that everybody know that he's a veteran rider, and we all know.
Yeah, it sort of came to my attention a bit more yesterday morning when Jakob Mosca came to have a conversation with me. And obviously it is getting quite hot now. But like in all of these circumstances, it needs to be a very fine balance between what we want to have happen and making a big fuss, or maybe being more selective with what we make a big fuss about. Because if we start now complaining about a lot of things, then we kind of lose the effect of being a united group and being able to actually make change. Now, I'm also maybe not the right person to ask about this, because I quite enjoy racing in the heat, and I've been closer to the front of the peloton during this race. And I think when I talk to the soigneurs that are doing the feed zones, and they're seeing the guys that are 20 minutes behind, 30 minutes behind, that they are really, really suffering out there. We had a bit of a discussion on the bus where it was like, you see the instance of the hail, for example, on this stage. And I don't think anyone would say, you guys should have kept racing. I think everyone saw that and was like, clearly, it was like, all right, it's not safe to race now. It doesn't make any sense. But when it's something like the heat, it's much more, I think, subjective as well, and everybody handles it slightly differently. So when someone is complaining a lot, someone else might not be, and whether it's 40 degrees, 38 degrees, it also always depends. Like, for example, the temperature, I imagine on the forecast, was very similar yesterday, but depending on which valley you turned into or which wind you got, you could really feel the heat very differently. So I think it's a very difficult one, and we need to try to figure out how we can manage it in the future, because we are going to have these instances come up more often. And part of me almost feels as though the cold is an easier thing to identify than the heat. But yeah, it's a bit of a ongoing discussion that's going to need to potentially happen more and more in cycling, to figure out how we can manage these situations.
Pelacci, very short stage now to Cordoba, but we've had some good stages, we've had some humdingers over the past few years, including one won by Wout van Aert, but with quite a different configuration, a harder climb in the finale. What we have got now is a stage, well, it's very short, 110 kilometers, with nothing obvious, well, certainly nothing to tempt the GC riders into action, I would suggest, although you never know, you never know. It's undulating terrain nonetheless. We've got a 7 kilometer, 4% climb, that's a third category climb after 34 kilometers. Then we've got another third cat climb later in the stage. There are a lot of unclassified climbs on tomorrow's route, but nothing I don't think that's going to tempt the GC riders into action. Is it flat enough for the sprinters teams? Are there any sprinters teams left to control the race tomorrow for what will be a fairly routine sprint finish? I would suggest it probably is, Pelacci. I think Visma, Lisa Bike, they were already licking their lips about tomorrow's stage, and they will be even more so now. But thinking not so much about Wout van Aert, more about Matthew Brennan.
Good pick. I'm thinking it can come down to a sprint. And I like how on a Sunday, the Vuelta ends in one of the biggest cities in Andalusia, Cordoba, more than 300,000 inhabitants there. It will be a great spectacle for us at the TV, watching the city, watching the there's a hilly parkour that looks good. So curious to see it.
Indeed. That's coming tomorrow. Tomorrow will be graced by the presence, or with the presence, of Rob Hatch, television's Rob Hatch, I believe. After his commentary duties with TNT, he'll be joining me tomorrow. And then finally, we and the Vuelta a España will get a rest day. We don't expect too much to change on general classification, but it should be an interesting stage nonetheless. Short stages always are. Pelacci, I think this could be your last contribution of this Vuelta a España, although I'm sure you'll be on standby. You'll be on call whenever, should ever I need you next week. So who knows what might happen next week. But thank you very much in the meantime.
Bardiani won today. Hola. Adios.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Byrne.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with: thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.